7BR Part Heard. Hello and welcome to 7BR's Part Heard, the podcast that traverses the legal landscape, examining issues across multiple practice areas, guided by the diverse expertise of our members. This week, I'm joined by Jim Rowbottom to discuss what the news of the working conditions in Leicester's garment factories tell us about the law of modern slavery, enforcement practices, and corporate responsibility. Last week, the Sunday Times published an undercover investigation that said workers in a factory in Leicester that supplied the fast fashion company Boohoo were being paid as little as £3.50. This followed a report published by the campaign group Labour Behind the Label, which detailed allegations of intimidation, including threats of terminating employment if those testing positive for COVID-19 did not attend work, failure to provide any PPE or operate a socially distanced workplace, and withholding the identification documents of workers, many of whom are migrants with limited English. Jim has a multidisciplinary practice with emphasis on and experience in tort law, including clinical negligence, inquests and inquiries, criminal law, public law and human rights and equality law. He is listed as a leading junior in the inquest and inquiry sections of the Legal 500 and Chambers and Partners. Jim has particular experience in the law of modern slavery and human trafficking. Last year, he was invited to give evidence to the Home Affairs Select Committee's inquiry into modern slavery. He has appeared in the Supreme Court, and he is currently undertaking a PhD at King's College London on modern slavery, tort and human rights law. Hi, Jim. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Ellie.
Now, what seems immediately apparent from the reporting on this story is that there are multiple layers of exploitation at work in these allegations. There's the appallingly low wages, the cramped and unhygienic work conditions, the suggestions that some people have been forced to work despite testing positive for COVID, as well as the fact that employers are said to have held the ID documents of some of the workers. But situating those facts in the context of modern slavery, which parts can be accurately characterised as modern slavery? At what point do illegal and deeply unethical employment practices cross that threshold into modern slavery?
Yeah, so to give a classically lawyer answer to that, I'm afraid it's not a simple answer entirely. The term modern slavery gets bandied around a lot in the press and by politicians, but it has no real legal meaning other than it's the long title to the 2015 Modern Slavery Act. The offences under the Modern Slavery Act are under Section 1, slavery, servitude or forced or compulsory labour, and under Section 2, human trafficking. Now, when people use the term modern slavery in the press and certainly in kind of political circles, they tend to use it to describe exploitation that goes way beyond the remit of those offences. The second layer of complexity is that those offences themselves are not easy from a legal perspective for various reasons. Each element of them derives from a different international treaty. So slavery, which is the exercise of any or all of the powers of the the three elements of Section 1 of slavery, servitude or forced compulsory labour are slavery, which is defined by the 1926 Anti-Slavery Convention, and it's any or all of the exercise of any or all of the powers of ownership over another person. Servitude is derived from the 1958 Supplementary UN Convention on Slavery, and forced or compulsory labour is derived from the 1930 International Labour Organization Convention. When we brought in the Modern Slavery Act, we just said the Section 1 offences, so those three different elements, mean what the European Court of Human Rights says they mean. So that if you're trying to explain to someone what forced or compulsory labour is, you have to look at the ECHR case law and then back at the ILO convention from 1929 to find the different elements. So it's not simple. They have an ascending scale, broadly speaking, of severity, but again, that's not a kind of cardinal principle. Forced labour can actually be very wide. So there was a very recent case in the Grand Chamber of the European Court of Human Rights called SM and Croatia from the 25th of June, that confirmed the definition of forced labour given in a case called Chowdhury from 2017. And the definition of consent given in Chowdhury is very broad. So there it was said that the court considers where an employer abuses his power or takes advantage of the vulnerability of his workers in order to exploit them. They don't offer themselves voluntarily. And certainly the deprivation of people's immigration documents, the working of long hours, the use of kind of psychological threats and threats to report people to immigration authorities, those kind of things are classic features of forced labour. And so the problem is really, and I'm not au fait enough with the individual facts of the Leicester cases, but some of those cases will amount to forced labour at the bottom end of the slavery, servitude, force and compulsory labour sense. So if you take a technical view of modern slavery, they would amount to it. But some of them are just going to be extreme labour exploitation, because if you're paying someone £2 instead of the national minimum wage, in and of itself, that's not forced labour. You can imagine when you start getting those concepts in and training law enforcement people in them, that it's not entirely simple. And I think that's one of the reasons that there are kind of enforcement issues in the area.
It's interesting that you said that modern slavery as a term has been bandied around a lot, because something else that's been mentioned a lot is sort of describing the situation as sort of shocking and surprising. But from your perspective, as someone who works in this area with experience in cases of modern slavery and human trafficking in the UK, how shocking is this really?
I have to say I was surprised, actually, because I mean, I've seen the subsequent reporting of it, particularly in the Financial Times, and I wasn't aware that these issues have been known since, you know, 2018 and were widely kind of acknowledged in certain circles. The cases I see and work on tend to be, there's different factual remits, but you may have European workers who are trafficked for the purposes of labour exploitation into kind of big businesses over here. Or you may have kind of domestic servitude type cases where people may be trafficked from different countries in order to provide, you know, services in the home. You may have, of course, you know, things like county lines or internal trafficking, but I wasn't aware that there were widespread practices of systemic failures to pay the national minimum wage of people who hadn't been trafficked in the sense of the act part of that, that they would ostensibly voluntarily, leaving aside the issue of consent, which, as I said, is a bit more difficult, that they would just be working in factories in Britain for, you know, for that low wages, and that it was openly known and not the relevant authorities hadn't enforced it. I didn't know that.
Yeah. As you mentioned, these are sort of systemic failures, and it is important to note that the working conditions are occurring in the supply chain rather than the company itself. But you referenced previous reporting, some of which dates back to 2017, and Boohoo was made aware at that time of the wage issues in several of their supplier factories. So what are the obligations that corporations are under to ensure that this sort of exploitation doesn't occur in their supply chains? And do you think that those obligations are sufficient?
Yeah, well, Section 54 of the Modern Slavery Act obligates companies who have a turnover of over £36 million to make a slavery transparency statement each financial year, which they have to put on their website, which details the policies and procedures they have in place in respect of ensuring that there's no modern slavery in their workforce and in their supply chains. That the Home Secretary has a power to ensure that companies publish those statements by taking the issue to court, but that power's never been used. There are no legal sanctions for a failure to comply, other than the potential enforcement by the Home Secretary. And I mean, in my view, and I think in the view of most kind of NGOs and people that work in this area, the enforcement powers and the powers that ensure or should ensure transparency in these supply chains and ensure that there isn't this labour exploitation aren't there yet. There was a government consultation in August and July of last year on the strengthening of the transparency provisions of the Modern Slavery Act, and that was looking at proper powers to enforce compliance and perhaps penalties, maybe even civil remedies. But after the consultation stage, there was a general election and the Johnson government doesn't seem to have pursued it. The website has never been updated since August 2019.
You mentioned civil remedies there, and naturally a lot of the focus at the moment is on how to prevent these kind of practices happening at all. But if someone has been the victim of modern slavery, what recourse to compensation are available at the moment?
Well, at the moment it's the traditional court mechanisms, alongside the possibility of a criminal injuries compensation claim. The seeker system, so the criminal injury system, isn't well set up for trafficking victims because the nature of, and when I say trafficking, I use it as a wide term to encompass modern slavery. It's one of the problems of terminology in these cases. But there's a broad range of conduct that these kind of terms cover. And in order to get a successful seeker claim, you have to have had suffered a crime of violence, and there are issues as to where the violence is used or whether it's kind of more insidious forms of control. You could go to an employment tribunal, but employment tribunals don't have the power to award damages for distress and anxiety unless there's discrimination or Equality Act harassment there. And there was a case that went to the Supreme Court that in 2016, where the Supreme Court said in Taiwo and Alegbi that Parliament should look at having a civil remedy for these kind of cases, but that's never been done. Alternatively, you can go to the civil courts. Now, legal aid is in principle available under LASPO, the Legal Aid Act of 2012, for these kind of cases. But for one reason or another, they're difficult. They take a long time to run. The claimants are often in very difficult circumstances and may be destitute. And so really, while they have theoretically the option of enforcing in proceedings against their traffickers, also the traffickers are likely to have fled and have dissipated their assets. So a lot of NGOs and organisations are much more keen on developing penalties directly against companies that benefit from it, because, you know, it ultimately it's the labour and the cheap value of what is being produced or however the relevant industry works that is causing people to exploit these individuals.
There have been numerous suggestions about how this problem came to be. Leicester's Deputy Mayor Adam Clark commented that part of the problem, he thinks, is that there are too many different enforcement bodies, as HMRC and then the Gangmasters and Labour Abuse Authority, etc. But what, in your view, are some of the barriers to tackling problems like forced labour? Is it this kind of fragmentation of enforcement powers and responsibilities, or are there wider, more conceptual issues?
Partly it's conceptual, I think, in the sense that, is it a structural problem to do with, you know, low pay in the workplace, or is it a criminal offence that is, you know, punishable by life imprisonment in the case of both human trafficking and slavery, servitude and forced compulsory labour? So that you have this situation where we have made severe labour exploitation such that it amounts to one of those two offences. You've made it a criminal offence, but you have then given enforcement bodies, particularly in the case of the Gangmasters and Labour Abuse Authority, the GLAR, a body whose traditional role is to do with, you know, labour standards, and then the HSE, the Health and Safety Executive, which is to do with safety in the workplace. You know, they both have important enforcement roles. So who is taking the job of investigating, say, something like the Leicester factories? Is it a safety at work issue? Is it a gangmaster type issue? Or is it so serious that the Leicester police should be going in and investigating? Now, the police, where they think that an offence under the Modern Slavery Act has been committed, and we should remember that at least theoretically, a company could commit one of those offences if subject to the normal rules of attribution in criminal law, then there's nothing to stop the police going in and using their normal powers to investigate that. And I think there is an issue about that follows on from that about the concepts and the extent to which people understand the potential width of forced or compulsory labour, because some of the reports to me have sounded like forced or compulsory labour. And the GLAR, the Gangmasters and Labour Abuse Authority, have, although they've had their powers extended in 2017 under the Modern Slavery Act, they don't tend to take on the most serious cases in my experience. That might be changing, but there is, yeah, there are too many bodies that could theoretically take on these issues. And then I think a lack of clarity around the definitions and what kind of a wrong or crime it is, if you see what I mean.
What's the broader international picture in terms of due diligence and corporate responsibility, particularly in light of instruments like the UN Guiding Principles on Business and Human Rights?
Yeah, well, I mean, under the UN Guiding Principles, we are obligated, or we have committed to getting rid of slavery by 2030. There's a growing kind of awareness and movement that you could broadly call business and human rights, which is concerns labour exploitation and slavery used in a very broad sense, and also kind of environmental issues, but that is aimed at regulating companies and enforcing transparency. I think one of the problems is that tends to be that industry, if I can put it that way, is quite lawyer and business based, whether it's gained much political traction on the ground such that it becomes a voter issue in countries, I think is a question that's still open. I think the Boohoo case could perhaps make a change here as people become aware of the levels of exploitation, including myself, in the UK. Yeah, there's no doubt it's an emerging issue. France and Holland have, I think, due diligence laws which have enforcement powers or civil remedies attached. We don't have those. There's been a lot of that discussion about that here, but there was a government consultation on strengthening the supply chain enforcement and transparency in supply chains and strengthening the Section 54 Modern Slavery Act reporting mechanism last year. And all the relevant stakeholders and civil organisations reported to it, and then it was shelved in August 2019, and nothing's been heard since. So there's a query about the extent to which there is commitment to make these kind of issues enforceable against companies.
Finally, Jim, you made a point about the extent to which people understand the potential width of modern slavery and forced labour. I just wondered what you meant by that and what the significance of that point is as we move forward in this area.
Yes, yeah, interesting point. I blanch a bit at the use of the term slavery to describe labour exploitation at the lower end of the scale. I think particularly given, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement and the kind of social changes and developments that have been going on over the last couple of months, and the greater awareness of some of the historical wrongs of transatlantic slavery and slavery as it was practiced legally in different jurisdictions, that it's problematic for us to use the term slavery to describe all labour exploitation. There's never actually been a higher court authority since the Modern Slavery Act or its predecessor offence under the Coroners and Justice Act 2009 where there's been a definition of slavery provided. There may have been a conviction for it, but if there was, it's never been appealed to the Court of Appeal. There's an Australian case on it called Tang, but slavery is a gross violation of human rights. You know, it's at the top of the tree of the potential human rights violations of the person. And I do think we need to be a bit more careful about our use of it in language to indicate a much broader range of labour exploitation, a lot of which is to do with people's economic circumstances opposed to being the very highest level of kind of interpersonal wrong.
Jim, thank you very much for talking to me.
Thanks, Ellie.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of 7BR's Part Heard. Do join me next week when I'll be talking to Ross Beaton about what a COVID-19 inquiry might look like.